Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Today we're going to take a look at the contradictions, environmental contradictions, COVID contradictions, all types of contradictions. In fact, there's a whole campaign now to suggest, in fact, not just suggest, but almost demand complete compliance, because only their science, corporate, official, government science, supported by the media without any question, no research, don't want to contradict anything, that if you get the vaccine, you're protected. You won't get the virus, you won't spread the virus, you won't die. All right. We, on the other hand, representing real science, honest science, non-politicized and non-weaponized and non-monetized science, and it's growing, and we're not a few. We're not a few thousand. We're not even a few hundred thousand at this point. All over the world, we're saying, you got it all wrong. Today, we're going to show you the actual science. Richard Gale will come on, and he's going to read the peer-reviewed literature showing that if you have COVID, then you have a better immune response than if you were vaccinated. And why? This is not an opinion. These are peer-reviewed journals. Not one of these has been mentioned in any of the mainstream media or the official reports. So what's their agenda? Just to make profit? Just to control people? We'll show you the actual death certificates or death statistics, and it's completely different than theirs. They're denying anyone's really got a problem. It's very rare. It's not rare. In fact, more people have died because of COVID vaccines than all of the vaccines in the history of the United States, and then double that, triple it, quadruple it. That's how wrong they are. Now, wouldn't you think that when you can show 150,000 deaths, that someone in an official position, maybe at that little organization that is completely irrelevant today, the American Medical Association, maybe they would write an article showing bad science is what we're living with today. Not a word. We will. And ours, again, is not based upon opinion. Also, how about this? Pfizer is leading the whole COVID campaign at a pharmaceutical level. There are other companies enjoying massive profits. Well, what if I told you that today you're going to hear not one, not two, but three top scientists currently working for Pfizer telling you that the natural immunity from catching the virus is going to be better for you, safer for you than the vaccine. Yeah. And you'll hear them, you'll see them. Go to prn.fm so you can see this happening. Wow. We've got a lot to share. And we're going to do it on several levels. One's going to be philosophical. We're going to take a deep dive today. And we're going to look at something that needs to be discussed in depth. And that is, how does the whole world become captured by these special interests? And why don't they push back? Why don't they at least question what they're told? They're not. Also today, the police state is now in full presence. And therefore, I'm going to share a special commentary from John and Nisha Whitehead. The police state's reign of terror continues with help from the Supreme Court. Also today, we're going to show you a couple of videos. One is the Pfizer scientist. Another is a whistleblower, short segment whistleblower from inside Facebook, say Facebook has been misleading the public. Also, Senator Ron Johnson, the pandemic of unvaxxed. The data from England shows 63% of the Delta deaths in the last 7.5 months were from the fully vaccinated. So virtually everything that is coming out of the White House is a lie. It is the vaxxed who are dying at an astronomical rate based upon having been vaxxed. And the interesting thing is, just think of this for a moment. Virtually almost all of the unvaxxed that I've spoken with, which is a lot of people, and what the studies show, they're fully pro-vaccine. They've taken all the other vaccines. Their kids have taken all the other vaccines. The scientists, the Nobel Prize winners, the medical doctors have taken all the vaccines, and their children have as well. Why are they hesitant? We'll deal with that. We begin always with the latest on health and healing, and later on I'll open up the call line so you can call in on some of these topics to give your input. Now, one of the things that we should all be concerned about, and a lot of people are, is the state of our health. And in that regard, I mentioned this yesterday, red onions. They're really good for you. Here's the latest from the University of Guelph in Ontario. Quote, red onions are effective at killing cancer cells. So if you're looking for a flavorful way to help fight and prevent cancer, add red onion to your shopping list. In the first study of its kind, the university researchers looked at how the red onion and several other varieties affected the growth and proliferation of cancer cells. Okay, that's good. And the findings indicate that all onions are not created equal. The red onion at five different varieties was the best. They assessed the onion in terms of their effect against cancer cells and their ability to prevent cancer. Of the five species tested, the ruby red, I repeat, ruby, R-U-B-Y, red onion, was the most effective. Few people are aware that onions are somewhat of a superfood. Hopefully, studies like these will help to change that. Onions in general have very high concentrations of the flavonoid quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N. Now, quercetin is extremely powerful as an antiviral and a natural antihistamine. If you bruise easily, it's great for helping to heal bruises and prevent that. If you want better, tighter skin everywhere on your body, quercetin and vitamin C together help create collagen. So that's one of the things that's in the onion. So this particular study was with colon cancer cells placed in direct contact with quercetin that was extracted from the onion. And there was a communication between the cancer cells seemed to be disrupted by the compounds in the onion. So it disrupts the cancer pathogenesis. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Food Research International. So, the beneficial compounds block the production of both colon cancer cells and breast cancer cells. That's important. Now, from Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, an article published in Cell reports that age and aging itself are critical effects on the microbiome, meaning your good gut bacteria. They found that aging produces significant changes in the microbiome of the human small intestine, distinct from those caused by medications or illness. And that's important because as you age, generally people tend to keep the diet the same. And that's not good if it's not a good diet. And if it's a good diet, make it better. That's where supplementation comes in. You see, you've got about 20 feet in length of the small intestine, and it has the surface area of a tennis court. And that's where your microbiome and its relationship to aging occur. And that's what they found is that as you age, you're less likely to have rejuvenation in the body unless you specifically take in the nutrients from the food, the juices, and supplements that are known to create new stem cells, protect the existing cells, and with autophagy to clean out the debris in the cell so that the body can go through a proper senescence, get rid of this. It would be like you, if you just had to live in your bathroom for 5 years and the debris excrement was up to your neck. That's what it's like, metaphorically, if a cell has no way of releasing all the toxins, all the dead debris, deformed debris, so the actual cell has a hard time functioning. Just that detoxification process. And that's why with all legitimate rejuvenator programs, Detoxification is the number one thing you do. If every American took 2 days a week to detoxify by modified fasting and cleansing up the whole body, they would be adding a lot of years to their life and quality years at that. And also, that's where you can recolonize your gut. Just repurpose it. Just like going in for an oil change in the car every 2,000 miles. You got to clean up the gut. Got to get rid of the sugars, the alcohol, the red meats, the refined carbohydrates, because all that and toxins, medications will disrupt your gut biome. And that's where your immune system also is. Remember, you got two brains, one's up there in the skull, the other's in your intestine, and they communicate. There are trillions of gut bacteria, trillions. So feed them. You feed them the right thing, you can help prevent gastrointestinal disease, diabetes, obesity, and some neurological disorders as well. It's all in the rejuvenation. Now also, there's another study, and this is from Tokai University of Tokyo Hospital. Liver function improves with the consumption of, guess what? Broccoli sprouts. A Japanese study of broccoli sprouts and liver function has found the sulforaphane, sulfur, S-U-L-F-O-R, phane, A-P-H-A-N-E, that is extremely beneficial for your liver. And it's a part of the broccoli sprouts. And it was given to male participants and was shown to improve hepatic abnormalities and overall liver function significantly. And this was a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial of people suffering with fatty liver disease, which is frequently from, it's non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, from sugars and refined carbohydrates, excess protein in the diet. So they either took the broccoli sprouts in capsule form or a placebo in capsule form. And so interesting that they're talking now in this study, because non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and by the way, you want to know how common it is? About 90 million Americans have it. 90 million. Almost a fourth of the American population. In any case, it can lead to cancer of the liver. So that's why it's important to clean up your liver. Now, who was the first person to ever tell me about broccoli sprouts and why they were good for your liver? Ann Wakemore. Ann came to visit me at the Healing Fertler Farm upstate New York, 1971. And we were having conversations about detoxification, the best methods. And she says she grows all these sprouts, makes fresh wheatgrass juice every day, has people taking 2 ounces of wheatgrass juice about 8 times a day, or 16 ounces a day. And she sees how they really begin to change after about 3 or 4 days. She was right. Now, mind you, that's 50 years ago. 50 years ago, and they're just finding this out in a study in Japan. Well, okay. That's what it takes. That's what it takes. Also today, I was asked a question the other day at the farmer's market. A person said that there was some kind of a skin cream that was being promoted, and is this safe? And I was at the booth next door looking at some fresh produce and said, Gary, don't want to bother you, but Bob, what do you think of this? I'm concerned about glycerin. Is it safe? I said, well, I don't have time then because I was rushed, but I just want to address Robert. Robert, glycerin is safe and effective in psoriasis. In fact, you could go online, check the International Journal of Molecular Science, current issue, the Medical College of Georgia at Augusta University, and you'll find that patients have reported that glycerin, an inexpensive, slightly sweet liquid, high on the list of most of the skin lotions that people buy, is effective at combating their psoriasis, and science has backed that up. What it does, it helps calm the classic scaly red, raised, and itchy patches in the psoriasis model. The studies also provide more evidence of the different ways glycerin enables the healthy maturation of skin cells through four stages that result in a smooth, protective skin layer. And psoriasis is an immune-mediated problem that typically surfaces in young adults, but I'm guessing he's about 45, middle-aged adults as well, which skin cells instead multiply rapidly, piling up on inflamed patches. So that's why you want to take a look, see what you're doing. A clay mask also helps. That's very good, maybe once every 2 weeks. And just exfoliating, cleaning with a soft loofah, your skin each night helps removing the dead cells. And by the way, it's also true for the scalp. Most people don't think about massaging the scalp or really cleaning the scalp. They just clean the hair. You want a healthier hair, clean the scalp as well. Just something to help someone and hopefully other people who may have a similar condition can benefit. By the way, our bodies can make glycerol from the carbohydrates and proteins and fats that we eat or already have in our body. Just make sure you have a healthy diet. That's the latest on health and nutrition. We're 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go directly to three scientists, senior scientists at Pfizer, discussing why natural immunity is preferable to the vaccines. And one of them mentions, it's not a good audio clip because this was taken undercover, but you can hear one of them say it's with their company, it's COVID is the money machine. You know, that's why everything is about making the money and trickling it down. But it's a little hard. That's why you want to go and watch it. You can, because they're showing you the words. But otherwise, you'll get some of the gist of what they're saying. We're only going to play 3 minutes of the clip. You can watch it, the full clip, at your leisure. Back in a moment.
Carl is an experienced biochemist at Pfizer with a history of working in the pharmaceutical industry. Nick admits to our undercover journalist that those who've had COVID have stronger immunity than those who've received the Pfizer COVID vaccine.
When somebody is naturally immune, like they got COVID, they probably have better, like not better, but more antibodies against the virus. Because what the vaccine is like I said, that protein that's just on the outside. So it's just one antibody against one specific part of the virus. When you actually get the virus, you're going to start producing antibodies against like multiple pieces of the virus. And not only just like the outside portion, like the inside portion, the actual virus. So your antibodies are probably better at that point than the vaccination.
But don't take his word for it. Two other Pfizer scientists echo the same sentiment.
So I'm well protected?
Yeah.
Like as much as the vaccine?
Probably more.
How so? Like how much more?
You're protected most likely for longer, since it was a natural response.
We're like bred and taught to be like vaccine is safer than actually getting COVID. You cannot like talk about this in public. If you have antibodies built up, like you should be able to prove that you have those built up.
I mean, I still feel like I work for like an evil corporation. They're trying to keep track of everyone that's been vaccinated versus the census of how many people are actually reported. Basically, our organization is run on COVID money now. You don't talk about anything that can possibly implicate you or like Big Pharma. Like even if you shut the door to the office, it's kind of like, who's listening?
I specifically have like, oh God, I signed NDAs against this.
The government doesn't want to show that the darn vaccine is full of shit.
It needs to be a registry of the people who aren't vaccinated. That's sounding very dirty. I'm going to go door to door and stab everyone. Oh, it's just your booster shot.
Don't get the Johnson and Johnson.
I didn't tell you that.
She didn't want to take it because of her religious beliefs. She was coerced into taking
it. They are not reporting because they want to show it on the map.
Oh god, I signed the NDAs against this.
So your antibodies are probably better at that point than the vaccination.
You're not wearing a wire, right?
Okay, now we have Richard Gill, scholar in residence. Richard, you have reviewed the actual scientific literature. We're not engaged in opinion, just scientific, independent scientific fact. What does the literature and the real science actually show? What provides greater protection, the vaccine or becoming infected? And that's, and I'll distinguish this between those who are at risk, older people with comorbidities, and those, the rest of the population, which is at under 1% risk.
Yeah. Excuse me, guys. So I was following along a timeline here, going back over a year ago and looking at comparing both reports, studies coming out about natural immunity. And let's remember that these kind of studies really didn't get underway until the pandemic was declared. So we're speaking about March in this country and in Europe and all. And therefore, you can only do so much in terms of time, obviously, because every month after month after month. So there has been, as these studies have consistently followed 1 month after the other. It was first natural immunity would confer 6 months, and then that was back a year ago in November. Rockefeller University was doing most of that research, and then shortly thereafter there was another study that was done by a group of researchers from Cardiff University and St. George and University of London, that they actually had discovered a new type of senescent killer immune cell. So this is a type of a T cell that they found that actually self-renews. And subsequent to this was then we were discovering that, wow, the vaccine works for 8 months. Or excuse me, that natural immunity will last for 8 months. And then the next month, another study would come out for 9 months. About this same time, though, is what we, and I think this is an important point to stick in here, is that Fauci had then come out stating that everything about herd immunity, and that herd immunity could be quickly reached. However, it would require vaccination. And it was at this same time, last November, when the World Health Organization redefined its definition of herd immunity. So originally, herd immunity was, I'm quoting from the original definition, herd immunity is the indirect protection from an infectious disease that happens when a population is immune either through vaccination or a natural immunity developed through previous infection. Then, right before the rollout of the vaccines, it was redefined. And on their website, you find herd immunity, also known as population immunity, is a concept used for vaccination in which a population can be protected from a certain virus if a threshold of vaccination is reached. They've completely redefined it. And this was the same propaganda that Fauci was preaching right before the vaccine rollout in December. Monash University in Australia quickly came back with a new study that they did showing that natural immunity lasts 8 months. And then that was a very important study because that was just followed by the World Health Organization's redefinition. Then in early January, now the vaccines have been rolled out. People are starting to get them. La Jolla Institute of Immunology, a very prestigious institute, by the way, they found again that the SARS-2 infection would last 8, perhaps 9 months. So they were upping what Rockefeller University originally said. And then That was quickly followed by the University of East Anglia and the Norwich School of Medicine in the UK, reconfirming La Jolla's research. We're now at the end of January. And then the big studies start to come out of Israel, because Israel has now been vaccinating the majority of the more rapidly than any other country in the world, as well as just relying strictly on Pfizer's. And now they're witnessing that the vaccine immunity is waning rapidly. You know, at first we were being told 6 months, and then it was going down to 5 months, 4 months, 3 months. So they were the ones who identified this. And again, they confirmed that the antibodies, this is through the Yehuda Medical Research Institute in Israel, and this was reported, this was a report that was submitted to the Israeli Health Ministry, and that the antibodies will last at least up to 8 months. So we're still in this ballpark until March of this year. Duke Medical School, they're, along with the National Center for Infectious Diseases, came out with a report that these neutralizing antibodies from being infected could last several decades. And then this was confirmed again by county health officials in conjunction with some of the local universities in that county, where the Amish community had first declared that their herd immunity had been reached. And of course, the Amish do not vaccinate, as we probably all know. The May issue of Nature magazine, University of New South Wales in Australia, found that the neutralizing antibody levels that were highly predictive for assuring the immune protection from symptomatic cases of SARS. But at this time, the FDA started to begin advising no more antibody tests to determine immunity or for protection among vaccinated people, which was very odd. The actual wording of the FDA was antibody tests should not be used at this time to determine immunity or protection against COVID-19 at any time, and especially after a person has received a COVID-19 vaccination. They just don't want to know. I mean, they want to keep the vaccine myth going. In June, University of Bristol comes out stating young infants produce extraordinary strong immune response against SARS-2 compared to all other groups. Again in July, Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center, they came out with a fundamental study showing the durability of these specific antibodies, B-cell, T-cell responses, and for conferring long-lived immunity. Also noting in particular, a different cell, what's an RBD memory B cell, which vaccines will not trigger. And this was fundamental. So if you're getting a vaccine, you will be getting your IgG, immunoglobulin G and immunoglobulin A, antibodies will be produced. But it's not producing these other antibodies that seem to be the ones that are providing this long-term immunity. End of July, Israel National News reports that their researchers in Israeli studies that natural immunity is now 6 times greater than that offered by vaccines. And then just more recently, and this was reported by Bloomberg, another study coming out of Israel from the Samson Asuta Ashod University, that the natural immunity is 13 times greater than the vaccine. And that's where we're kind of at now. So these numbers will probably continue to grow as the months go by.
Okay, Richard, that's good. Remember, we're not giving opinion here. There's no political, ideological, financial, no debate on that at all. This is simply what the world science is showing us, and none of this is being reported, not a single sentence, and yet it's all from high-quality journals, from Nature magazine on, and yet you wouldn't know any of this existed. This audience knows the truth. All the other shows don't know this truth. So I think it's important. Also, our emphasis now should really be on trying to help people as best as possible who are at risk, and for that, we have protocols, medically approved and clinically used protocols, that if we begin a national program, of people losing weight, getting on a healthy diet, exercising, eating the right kind of foods, that immediately gives them a big opportunity, if they are infected, to withstand it. And we're not doing anything about that. So that should tell you something, because this information, as you know, we wrote the first articles, the first four articles in the United States, anywhere, to show a natural approach using the peer review literature only, from the Library of Medicine only, and cited all of it, showing about vitamin D and vitamin C and quercetin, zinc, magnesium, and also bitter melon and astragalus, wild oregano oil, and curcumin, olive leaf extract, etc. All of that was helping people and did help people and keeps people healthy under normal circumstances. And again, it's not that you won't get infected. Most people sooner or later will be infected. But your state of health when you are infected will make a tremendous difference. And ask yourself this. The average American is not healthy. The average American is overweight and suffers from at least 2.5 comorbidities. And it's not older people. It's right through life. So wouldn't it make sense to help people do something to prevent a condition, to minimize what could happen? And yet they were told, don't do anything at all. Don't take any medicines. Don't take supplements. Don't take anything. Don't care about your diet, exercise. Just stay quarantined, social distance and mask until a vaccine becomes available. That should send a big red flag up for everybody that something is amiss, because the frontline doctors, and there are thousands upon thousands of them in Canada, the United States, they said, no, we're not going to wait. We've got a patient right in front of us. We can do something, and they have. And but by their experimentation, trying different medications, they have been able to save countless lives. So ask this question. Why would Anthony Fauci individually, because he runs the whole operation, the pharmaceutical companies collectively, the U.S. government as an overseer, and the media as the voice of that conglomerate, why would they not want you to prevent something except with the vaccine, knowing that between the first outbreak and the vaccine, even if the vaccine worked perfectly, and it doesn't, why wouldn't they want people to do whatever possible to prevent it? But that didn't happen. So it's estimated by different experts that upwards of 80% of people who've died, and there's 700,000 that died, so we're looking at over 600,000 Americans, lives could have been saved. Now, if in time we are able to have more whistleblowers, as you just heard from Pfizer, three of them, more people breaking ranks and coming forward and finally acknowledge, yeah, we should do this and we should do it going forward because we're always going to have this and other variants. But remember, the variant is very, very close in its genome to the original SARS-19. So when you have natural immunity, it's the immunity to the entire virus. When it's the vaccine, it's only the spike protein, as one of the senior scientists at Pfizer just acknowledged. And they're making the vaccine. Here's a scientist who's telling this. But this scientist would not tell this to the world, wouldn't tell it before a congressional hearing. So shouldn't those people who've been instrumental in preventing proactive and preventative measures, should they not at least be held accountable for crimes against humanity, preventable death, or homicide in a real world that is cause and effect? And I don't see that happening now. I've never seen it happen. It's just a suggestion. I'd like the people in the audience to weigh in on this. 888-874-4888. But then here's the larger question. How is it that people are so susceptible to propaganda and so resistant to the truth, where the truth no longer matters, where the truth is not to be found in anywhere in the mainstream? You can find it, but it's nowhere in the world of regular platforms. That's an interesting question. We're going to go now to a clip from, what is it, University of Ideas, on how the world became indoctrinated and what they're saying directly applies to COVID. Please listen in on this.
And the lie has, in fact, led us so far away from a normal society that you cannot even orient yourself any longer. In its dense, gray fog, not even one pillar can be seen. Lying has always been used for political purposes. Lies cover up corruption, past mistakes, and hidden motives, and they are an essential ingredient in political campaigning. Sometimes, however, political lies take on a much more sinister form. The lies become all-encompassing, embrace all aspects of life, and infect every corner of society. This occurrence is a sign that totalitarianism may be rising, for as the political philosopher Hannah Arendt noted, totalitarianism, at its essence, is an attempt at transforming reality into fiction. It is the attempt of corrupt and pathological state actors to impose a fictional account of the world onto the entire population. In Nazi Germany, it was the idea of a superior race and an unclean people that formed the big lie. In the Soviet Union, it was the belief that state communism could work and that all could be made equal. And from the big lie trickled down a stream of endless little lies. Referring to communist Russia, Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote, "In our country, the lie has become not just a moral category, but a pillar of the state." Describing Czechoslovakia under Soviet rule, Václav Havel similarly explained, "Life in the system is so thoroughly permeated with hypocrisy and lies. Because the regime is captive to its own lies, it must falsify everything. It falsifies the past. It falsifies the present, and it falsifies the future. It falsifies statistics." When a political system rests upon a bed of lies, what can be done to turn the tide back towards truth and freedom? In this video, drawing from the insights of Alexander Solzhenitsyn and Václav Havel, we are going to explore this question. The day before he was exiled from the Soviet Union, Alexander Solzhenitsyn published a short essay titled "Live Not by Lies," and in it he wrote, "We are approaching the brink. Already a universal spiritual demise is upon us. A physical one is about to flare up and engulf us and our children, while we continue to smile sheepishly and babble. But what can we do to stop it? We haven't the strength. But we can do everything, even if we comfort and lie to ourselves that this is not so. It is not they who are guilty of everything, but we ourselves, only we." When a state turns totalitarian, the individuals who live in these societies are not merely its victims. All the totalitarian regimes of the 20th century rose to power amidst thunderous applause, as many citizens openly called for the brutal control that defines this form of rule. Without mass support and compliance, the minority in the ruling class would be but paper tigers. The responsibility for the oppression, suffering, and loss of life that comes in the wake of totalitarianism, therefore, cannot be placed exclusively on politicians and bureaucrats. A large portion of responsibility must be placed on the citizens who support this form of rule, or else do nothing to resist. Václav Havel explains in his book, The Power of the Powerless, "There is obviously something in human beings which responds to this totalitarian system. Human beings are compelled to live within a lie, but they can be compelled to do so only because they are in fact capable of living in this way. Therefore, not only does the system alienate humanity, but at the same time, alienated humanity supports this system as its own involuntary master plan, as a degenerate image of its own degeneration, as a record of people's own failure as individuals. If the fuel for the growth of totalitarianism is weak and fearful individuals, then a cure is a personal revolution that takes place in hearts and minds and leads to an awakening of self-responsibility, courage, and strength. The best resistance to totalitarianism is simply to drive it out of our own souls, our own circumstances, our own land, to drive it out of contemporary humankind." Alexander Solzhenitsyn's writings played a major role in toppling the communist Soviet Empire, and he advised we engage in such a personal revolution by transforming our life in a way which targets the most vulnerable part of the totalitarian system, the lies upon which it is built. In Live Not by Lies, Solzhenitsyn explains, "And therein we find, neglected by us, the simplest, the most accessible key to our liberation. A personal non-participation in lies. even if all is covered by lies, even if all is under their rule, let us resist in the smallest way. Let their rule hold, not through me. Václav Havel was a dissident in communist Czechoslovakia, and he later became president. And he echoed Solzhenitsyn's sentiment that the most effective key to liberation from totalitarian rule is to commit to a non-participation in lies. Havel called this commitment living within the truth. If the main pillar of the totalitarian system is living a lie, then it is not surprising that the fundamental threat to it is living the truth. This is why the truth must be suppressed more severely than anything else. To engage in a non-participation in lies, or in Havel's terminology, to live within the truth, is to stop parroting the lies of the state and to refrain from acting in ways which conform to state propaganda. It is to resolve to live as freely and authentically as possible, to boldly express our individuality and spontaneity. Spontaneity with its incalculability, wrote Hannah Arendt, is the greatest of all obstacles to total domination over man. It is to follow our conscience and place morality above unjust laws, to fearlessly pursue personal and communal values, and to give voice to our thoughts undeterred by ridicule. To live within the truth is to act in ways which promote a cultural reawakening, thus serving as a counterforce to the totalitarian system's coercive march towards cultural stagnation, suffering, and death. Our way must be, never knowingly support lies. In communist Czechoslovakia, the Velvet Revolution, or non-violent fall of totalitarianism, depended not so much upon political reform, but upon the existence of growing numbers of individuals who were willing to live within the truth, even when things were at their worst. They could equally have been poets, painters, musicians, or simply ordinary citizens who were able to maintain their human dignity. One thing, however, seems clear. The attempt at political reform was not the cause of society's reawakening, but rather the final outcome of that reawakening. As an example of how living within the truth can revitalize a society, Havel recounts the story of a rock band, the Plastic People of the Universe. In communist Czechoslovakia, musicians were required to register with authorities and were banned from creating music deemed too provocative or threatening to the political system. The Plastic People of the Universe refused to toe the line, and following a concert in 1976, they were arrested, and the ensuing trial gained enormous public interest. The state media branded the band members as drug addicts.
You can listen. That's only one half of it. We have it posted at prn.fm. You can listen to it. By the way, my guest tonight to talk about 9/11 and all the issues the 9/11 Commission ignored, and I waited several weeks, almost a month since 9/11 celebrations, because I saw nothing constructive come from all that. Nothing. But so I wanted to invite the one person from British Columbia. His name is Ray McGinnis. He is an outstanding researcher. And he's non-political. So we're going to talk about the unanswered questions, what the September 11th families asked, what the 9/11 Commission ignored. There's no conspiracy here. I will not be asking him about who did what. I will ask him what evidence was suppressed that was found to be viable. Why did they not want that evidence put into the final report? Why were hundreds of people denied an opportunity who were first-person witnesses? So it'll be an unusual program. That'll be tonight at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour. Now I'm going to take one call immediately, or maybe two. I think we have Barry from Long Island, and then we have Ronald from Long Island also, because I want to give you something else to think about. But we'll talk with Barry first. Hi, Barry. Your turn.
Hey, Gary. How you doing? I just wanted to make two quick points. The drug companies have engaged in information warfare so effectively. And I know this is true because I speak to many people during the week in the course of my business, and I'm talking basically to fairly educated people. And I make it a point to everybody I speak to mention early treatment. I try to bring it up, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, zinc. And people look at me like I have two heads, like there's something so incredibly wrong with me that I would think that there's another way to treat this disease. So the only conclusion I can come to is that the drug companies have engaged in such effective psychological warfare to make people think that there is only one thing to do, and that's the vaccine. And I just want to make one other point about Paul Offit. I saw an interview with Paul Offit recently, and he was on, I think it was Channel 5, and the interviewer made the mistake of asking him about something he probably wasn't prepared to answer, and that's the myocarditis and the pericarditis. So the interviewer asked him this question, and he looked totally surprised. And his answer was, oh, yeah, we were totally surprised by that.
Okay. Well, at least he didn't say that it didn't exist, because there's a lot of scientific evidence and articles published in medical literature showing that it's very common now. In fact, there's a – I'll give you some other statistics in a moment, but let's say hello to Bob from Georgia. Hi, Bob. Your turn.
Hello?
You're on the air, Bob.
Actually, this is Ronald from Long Island.
Oh, go ahead, Ronald.
All right. In the next few years, as possible long-term side effects from the vaccines may present themselves, at what point do you think the death rate from vaccines could become so high, even though it's very high now? What if it were 10 times what it is today? At what point do you think it wouldn't matter?
It doesn't matter. If 10 million people died, I don't believe anyone in Washington, D.C. or the mainstream media would care. Remember, they've doubled down. Their ego's involved. Their belief system, their sense of value is involved of themselves. There's their survival. We don't have a capacity today to have another May Lai, in which a lot of people, a lot of soldiers executed without provocation, innocent women, men, and children in that village. One person was held accountable. Kali? And not for very long. Understand how our systems work. We are one of the most brutal criminal countries in world history. That is not to say we haven't made major progress. We have a lot of nice people. That is true. But those nice people have never been in power, except for occasional one or two here and there per state, per county or local. But they've never held the reins of really deciding policy making at the ethical and spiritual level. The media is right with them, because the media would also be held accountable. For example, how many people involved in the policy making from the legal department right up to the editor-in-chief, managing editor, and publisher resigned because of disgrace, because of promoting Judith Miller's fraudulent weapons of mass destruction? How about nobody? And look at the death that came from that. And you want to talk about death coming from other sources? What about a new report that's just out today, by the way? And this is about war crimes. Who says? Peter Beaumont from The Guardian. All right, what does he say? Quote, war crimes and crimes against humanity committed in Libya since 2016. Quote, fact-finding admission says migrants and detainees particularly exposed to violations since civil war. War crimes, and then he goes into them, murder, torture, enslavement, extrajudicial killings, and rape have been committed in Libya since 2016, the United Nations investigation has found. This independent fact-finding mission on Libya, commissioned by the UN Human Rights Council, and then goes into it. So, now they're acknowledging that since Gaddafi was toppled, that we caused all that, we the United States. We had support from France and the convicted felon now, Sarkozy. He'll be going to jail. Two separate counts against him now. He's been found guilty in both. And of course, Tony Blair. Here's the issue. Why has there not been a single editorial in the New York Times or on CNN or MSNBC or the Washington Post condemning the neoliberalistic, hegemonic mindset of Barack Obama and his national security advisors who supported all this, and also look at the Condoleezza Rices, look at the Hillary Clintons, look at all those people involved, look at all the generals, look at all the people who should have said no, and all of them said yes. Then look at the people who profit from that. Then look at the people who didn't profit from it. Look at all the people in Libya, thousands upon tens of thousands murdered, millions displaced, the entire country, which was number one on every indices, education and illiteracy, elimination of illiteracy, in income, in health, in longevity, in women's rights, everything. They were at the top of 54 countries, and those people personally destroyed it. When has there been any attacks challenging that? There hasn't been a one, not a single one, nor will there ever be. That's how it works. So you think someone's going to make an exception years from now when it's shown what a fraud this was and how lives could have been saved but weren't because of mercenary and self-serving interests, the pharmaceutical industry and its puppets like Fauci? Got to look at the history of how this all works. Then you understand. Okay? Thank you for your call. Appreciate it. And I just want to share a few more of these little insights that we're finding now. I have another study. This is the brand new one. I'm not sure Richard has this, but I'll share this with you. Quote, this is a brand new study. Antibodies persist for more than a year after COVID infection. All right, the immune system of the vast majority of people who have been infected with the virus will continue to carry antibodies against the virus for at least 12 months, but you also heard him say up to 20 years. This was published in the European Journal of Immunology as of today. So why isn't this knowledge shared with anyone? No one has this. Why not? And how about this? This is also an important ivermectin versus COVID in a poor, high-density state. Quote, Uttar Pradesh, India, 33 districts in that state have been declared COVID-free. Well, okay, not that entirely the entire state is COVID-free, but close to it. 241 million people and only 199 cases. The positive test rate is currently 0.01%. That's better than the United States. In other words, statistically zero. Why? It's not vaccination. Statistically speaking, none of their people have been vaccinated. While according to the Journal of the American Medical Association study, approximately 62% of the population in the United States showed vaccine-generated antibodies as of May, well, it was because they were giving prophylactically ivermectin. And by the way, they're very poor, only $1,000 per person per year in their per capita gross domestic product. Their entire 240 million people only earn $240 billion, and that's way below poverty lines. So you got highly congested people living together, very poor, and they're COVID-free. Then you have to look at the science, of which there are hundreds of studies, on what would happen if we gave everyone ivermectin, an FDA-approved drug, off-label. Cost $2 for a whole supply. But don't do that, because Pfizer has a new drug coming that will cost you only $2,000 or whatever they come up with. Why would you pay $2 when you could pay $2,000? Just makes sense, doesn't it? Well, that's the game you're in. And there's more and more evidence like this. Will you know about this? You will not. And that's the way it works. And by the way, one last thing. We got to say goodbye to our WBA audience because they're going to the news. We're going to continue to the top of the hour, and I will continue to take calls at 888-874-4888. So you think governmental agencies are working on your behalf? How about the EPA? This is from The Intercept today. Quote, EPA officials exposed whistleblowers 3 minutes after receiving confidential complaint. In response to a whistleblower complaint alleging corruption within the EPA's New Chemicals Division, agency officials immediately notified those accused of misconduct. So, when whistleblowers speak out about Environmental Protection Agency's practice for routinely approving dangerous chemicals, within minutes, those in charge notified everyone else. Well, that's how corrupt they are. That's just today. And also, there was 1,969 fetal deaths recorded following COVID-19 vaccines. This is from Brian Shilhavy. The CDC released more data today into the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which shows that there are now 1,969 fetal deaths among pregnant women who received the COVID-19 shot. So how can you say they're safe for women when, A, pregnant women were never tested, and this is part of that dynamic and that problem? So by contrast, they looked at the data, the exact same search in the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System for all COVID vaccines for the past 30 years and returned results of 2,183 fetal deaths over a 30-year period. And we've had nearly that in just this 6.5 months. So, and yet the CDC continues to say, yes, take the vaccines, take the vaccines. So they're not giving the full story. And that's what it is. Let's see if we have someone else up who would like to make a comment. Be happy to take your calls now. Bob from Georgia. Bob, your turn.
Gary, thank you. This is so important. Last week on your show, Dane Withington discussed ozone thinning, methane release, and geoengineering. Mm-hmm. And I feel I'm somewhat qualified here as my background includes engineering degrees in multiple disciplines. Per your suggestion, sadly, after examining the UV measurements presenting it at geoengineeringwatch.org, it's clear that at the current rate of ozone loss, our ozone shield will be gone by 2025 at the latest. Life can't exist under the constant condition of X-ray radiation that would follow the loss of our ozone layer. In addition, methane release is a runaway feedback loop that's contributing to global warming. Search Siberian methane craters and you will be astonished. So be crystal clear about the fact that there is no known technical fix to either of these problems. The Earth needs to rebalance its climate and energy systems, and the various forms of geoengineering that are being carried out right now are straitjacketing this rebalancing. The solution, remove this straitjacket. If you don't believe solar radiation management geoengineering is happening, just simply look up at one of the countless white spray trails in our sky and how it does not disappear, but instead disperses into a cloud-like structure. Condensation absolutely does not behave in this way. Does your breath on a cold day hang in the air like a white cloud without dissipating? No, of course not. So how do we affect change? Just as a flock of starlings in flight moves with a group consciousness, each of us, as a member of the group consciousness of mankind, must wake up to what is being done to our Earth. Only then can we change direction in mid-flight. This right now is our last call for tomorrow.
Okay, I appreciate that input. Thank you. We're out of time, everyone. Just two quick program announcements. One, the webinar, which we've edited from 8 hours to 7.5 hours to tighten it up, that has all the information that I know that would help you prevent infection, or if you are infected, to help you stay healthy. That is up now on GaryNall.com, How to Survive COVID. But also, just 2 weeks now, Saturday at noon, we'll be premiering The Last Call for Tomorrow, the documentary on the environment, the problem, the solutions. It'll be live, but then there'll be two guests, two of the best guests on the environment you could ever imagine. Guy McPherson's one, and they'll be talking for about an hour each. We'll be opening up for comments and questions at that time. I'll also be talking at that time about best places environmentally to live in the United States. go to GaryNoll.com. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.